Hello and welcome to another episode of The Philosophy Guy. So today's episode is another discussion-based episode. And this one is, I need to put a little explanation so you kind of know what it's about going in and kind of to explain a couple of things really quick. So basically, this was a conversation we kind of put together somewhat last minute, same day. And I'm involved with the Discord group, this kind of theology discussion group. And yeah, we kind of got a conversation together. I actually didn't know going in if I was going to post it on my podcast feed, but I found the conversation so helpful that I decided to post it up on the main feed of my podcast. So saying that, the reason I was considering not was because it was kind of thrown together last minute. So the audio isn't great on Tyler's end, who is the Christian I brought on, for about the first like 15 minutes. But then after that, it improves a little bit. But it's still like easily listenable. I wouldn't post it on here if it wasn't still easily to listen to. It's just not kind of the microphone quality you might be used to, which it's not Tyler's fault. It was just because I didn't know for sure where I was going to post it. It was more I just wanted to have the conversation, but I found it so beneficial. I recorded it, and here we are. So basically, to kind of give you some explanation, I'm going to post that Discord group below, of course, my Discord group. And then also I'll try to post the links of people involved in the discussion. And as you know, if you're like involved in my Discord, you know that I've been looking for a Christian that's, you can tell, that has thought deeply about some of these things to talk to about some of my ideas around spirituality, around religion itself, around truth and around worldviews, and also kind of just connecting with spiritual experiences and personal experiences and stuff like that. Kind of those hot button issues that I kind of generalized there, but to kind of give you the gist of what the conversation's about. And yeah, it was basically a discussion around those. And I kind of wanted to get a Christian's feedback and what a well-versed in philosophy type of Christian would respond to some of the issues I raised, and also that they can hear my perspective and stuff like that. And Tyler was great for that. We also had Yuris, who, and I'll try to get a link for his, he's kind of like a TikTok philosopher. I'll get his stuff below as well if I can. But yeah, so to give you more about Tyler, because most of the conversation that's posted here today is mostly between Tyler and I, and it's about, he's a Christian, he's an ex-atheist and host of The Freed Thinker on YouTube, and you can also find The Freed Thinker wherever you listen to podcasts as well. So check those out to kind of get some more of his ideas. But yeah, I hope you enjoy this conversation, and I had a lot of fun with it. And yeah, let's enter the labyrinth. I don't have a lot of strict beliefs, because I realize I don't know nearly enough about anything to like possibly have a, I guess you could say, fixed worldview. But some of the ideas that I kind of lean towards and like, and kind of like put, I'm interested in, and I think they have some interesting perspectives. I guess I'll kind of align myself with those for the sake of this discussion. But I kind of like some of the ideas around, yeah, like pantheism, like you mentioned. And then also, I guess maybe like the main one that might spark conversation and pushback that would be kind of fun is this idea that the universe is conscious in a sense, or like there's something fundamental about consciousness to the universe. And I think if we kind of take a more outward perspective of that, an outward view of that, you could kind of spin that into a concept of God. So that's why I don't really call myself an atheist. And I don't even like, I really even call myself an agnostic, because I kind of like that idea of, if the universe is conscious, if we accept that, then there is some sort of concept of God that fits into that, because there's some sort of guiding energy, guiding force to it. And my basis for believing, I guess, the universe is conscious stems from, well, I don't know how much I want to unpack right now, but like to kind of give you the basic idea, it's kind of like this idea, I guess you could start with like this idea, it's called, how do I pronounce it? I think it's holism. Holism is, it's more of like this top-down approach. And you know, some people in science really accept it as well. It's this top-down approach in the sense that it believes that the universe kind of has these more complex systems in place, and then everything else falls under that. Where like a lot of times the accepted view in science as well. And I don't want to say accepted view, but a common view in science is like the more of the bottom-up approach, where it's like all these kind of smaller structures and systems make complex systems, right? So like the offshoot of that runs into the cosmopsychism that I think was mentioned in the chat before this discussion, where it kind of goes into that idea that A, consciousness is fundamental to the universe, and B, it kind of goes in line with this idea that there is this one consciousness that we're kind of all pulling from. And that kind of gets me into, so those beliefs kind of lead me into a desire to kind of understand the spiritual experience, because I think the spiritual experiences that people have stem from this conscious experience, because that's what we have. And that's kind of we all have our own unique conscious experience. So that's why I'm fascinated by like what Christians have to say about that. And kind of, I think that's enough to kind of get the conversation started. But feel free to ask me any like clarifier questions.
I don't know how helpful of an interlocutor I'll be on it, because I don't read very widely in the world of panentheism or
right.
Cosmic psychism or anything like that. So it's just an area of religious epistemology or philosophy of religion that I have not read next to anything on.
Right.
But I guess just conceptually to help me understand it, because I'm not sure that I know.
Sorry, so you cut out there for like 1 second, if you want to rephrase.
Yeah, I'm just, I don't really understand the view, and that's not a fault on yours. It's just, it's a newer concept for me. I'm trying to flesh out what it even means.
Right.
And so pantheism is historically that everything is divine, right? So God just is the collective of all things, right?
Yeah, essentially. So, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. And panentheism is kind of like a very imminent version of omnipresence, right? So it's just not that a transcendent God is just omnipresent. It's that, you know, there is a God outside of nature, but they're only present in nature, right? It's kind of weird quasi cross of pantheism and omnipresence. I don't know if you have any thoughts on kind of which direction you'd go between like pantheism or panentheism, or are neither of those kind of the right category?
I mean, honestly, it's like one of those things where I'm not like strictly on one of those. Like I would both of those I would find interesting to align myself with, if that makes sense. So I guess the main thing, like the main importance of like, say I'm to align myself for like this conversation is this idea, I guess, around consciousness. But like, I don't know, we can steer the conversation towards that direction where you kind of asked me about that. But I was also kind of curious, because like, although it comes across as like a very almost like spiritual / religious area of thought, but it's also like a really philosophical school of thought. And it's also kind of getting some traction in the scientific community. So it's kind of, it plays both sides. It's kind of part of the reason I find it interesting is because it kind of allows me to have conversations with a bunch of people. So yeah, we can like steer it whatever way you want, in the sense that we can do it more on that. Or I was also thinking like, because I'm also kind of curious of how you got to your worldview of, because like you're a Christian, right? And saying like, because like, so I guess maybe let me backtrack for like 1 second to kind of explain why I kind of find this important for this conversation on like the pantheism stuff. Is because through that worldview, it allows me to basically not discount spiritual experiences that people have. It's not saying that it's not necessarily saying they're getting in tune with some like special thing in the universe. It's more saying like those experiences can be really real for them and very insightful for them. And it could also leave open the door that it's possibly giving them insight maybe into something about the universe. So I guess the main purpose is I find that, and I know like what you said earlier, that maybe this isn't you, but a lot of Christians, for example, they discount other people's spiritual experiences. And I guess I want to know kind of their reasons for doing that. And I'm not, yeah, like I said, like maybe you're not the, this isn't you, but I'm still like curious of like how you came to Christianity, for example.
So just again, for conceptual clarity, and I'm not, again, I understand that, you know, you're not even, I wouldn't even say that from what you've just said, I wouldn't even say that you affirm these, just kind of, you're playing with the ideas.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And that it allows you, maybe you're not really comfortable with saying, oh, well, you know, 99% of humanity that's ever lived is just flat out delusional. But you're not really comfortable with saying, oh, well, you know, all these contradictory claims are somehow all heretical either.
Right.
So this view seems to help you navigate that tension. Is that fair?
Yeah. And yeah. Let's see where that takes us for sure.
Okay.
That's an accurate assessment. Yeah.
For how I got to where I got, just I guess when I think about those questions, I understand a pretty strong kind of dichotomy between how someone actually comes to a belief in something, and then kind of the abstract conversation about how you might demonstrate that a belief is warranted or someone is justified in holding that belief. Right.
Right.
So, someone might come, for example, I've had religious experiences, nothing in kind of, I don't think I've had anything quite the mystical religious experience whatsoever, but I've had what I consider to be a religious experience. That might be something that adds warrant for me to believe, right? I think I'm justified in my belief about it, absent any, you know, any defeaters for it. But I wouldn't use that as say, you know, here's a reason why, you know, my personal experience is now a demonstration for why you ought to have the same religious beliefs that I have. Right? I don't think warrant always works in both directions that way. Does that make sense?
You don't, sorry, say that last one. I like couldn't really hear it very well. You don't think what warrants?
I don't think warrant necessarily works in both directions, right?
Oh, okay.
I might have a religious experience that warrants my belief, right? So given my warrant, I'm justified to believe what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's the case that the same thing that warrants my belief so that I can be justified in my belief is something that I can then turn around as evidence for why you, who hasn't had that experience, should you know, believe, right? It's not my experience isn't warrant for you to believe.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, yeah, I totally agree at that
not,
point.
At least it's not necessary, right? So,
right.
So it may be the case that you think I am of such a character and such a conviction. You believe my testimony. I mean, testimony it can be a warranting condition. It's just I'm not certain that experiences that are entirely private, like religious experiences are, typically, are of that nature.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, so I guess I kind of figured that's what you were meaning when we were like chatting about it. So I guess so, because I'm assuming, I don't want to like, so tell me if I categorize you wrong in any way, but so you still believe that, say, like you should try to get people to become Christian, right?
Yeah, I affirm that. I think the biblical mandate for the Great Commission is obvious and clear.
So what makes you like, what reasons do you have for believing, like, say, Christianity is true? And that would also include the spiritual aspects of Christianity, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Cause like I've met a few, I don't know if you've like heard of these people, but, they're like Christians where they follow the, I guess it's wrong to categorize them as Christians technically, from Christians. But they like follow the Christian morality, for example, but they are atheists. I don't know if you heard of them. So I just wanted to like make sure you weren't that.
I'm a Christian in the, you know, intrinsically religious
right.
sense. I have high levels of intrinsic religiosity, right? To use kind of the sociological way to describe religion as opposed to extrinsic religion, which is kind of the what you describe, kind of the outward trappings of it.
Mm-hmm.
If I can just interject for a second, Tyler, yeah. I think it would be helpful for Brendan at this point if maybe now you kind of lay out your concept of God, just kind of tease yeah. out what you mean by God, and then we can toss the ball back to Brendan and see if Brendan, if that view of God that Tyler accepts, if that's similar to your thinking about God, and just so we can kind of just see where we agree, where we don't, where we disagree, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I'm a Christian theist, right? So,
right.
And I'm a Christian theist in the Reformed tradition. So, I very self-consciously am not trying to defend theism generally, right? I mean, I think that my belief and my worldview is consistent in affirming and defending the God of classical Christian theism, right? So, not only, you know, kind of the perfect being, omnimax being of the philosophers, but specifically, the Trinitarian God who has revealed himself in the person and work of Jesus Christ, right? So that would be the concept of God that I would affirm and defend.
Okay. let me see if I can like think of a, cause I'm still like curious. So I guess I am curious of like how, can you give me, if this is too much to ask, just like say, cause I know this is kind of like an on the fly conversation.
Yeah.
Like what basis do you have for basically believing that? Like why is, cause like you seem like someone that's like very into philosophy and stuff and all that, but like what brought you to Christianity itself? And you can get into like the doctrine. You don't need to get into like the concepts of like why we need a first mover and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and this is why I said that what brought me to Christian conviction, to faith in Jesus Christ is not necessarily the same thing, that I think, would be the same as like a reasonable case for something. Right. So I think apologetics, a reasonable case is simply the impossibility of the contrary. But what, you right. know, what brought me to faith is this is where something like religious experience happened, because I was an atheist, pretty self-admittedly and ardently an atheist. It's my conviction now. You know, I think sometimes we get warrant in conviction by looking back on how something happened, even if in the moment we're not sure of what's going on. Now I would look back and I'd say, I thank God, because it was entirely. It was entirely by his act, by his sovereign administration of grace to me that I came to believe, right? So there's kind of that theological answer. Mm-hmm. The biographical answer is simply that I was in a philosophy program and started to have, by my atheistic professor, started to have, because he was honest enough to admit that there are some really good arguments for the existence of God, the moral argument being one, that naturalism just is failing to give adequate answers and explanations for. And that kind of opened up my thinking to reflect on my own worldview. I became what Van Til and Bahnsen called epistemologically self-aware, and started, that sounds kind of mystical, but it's not. It's actually just a philosophical term to say that I started to become aware of my epistemic commitments, my presuppositions, whether or not those were consistent to ground my own worldview and rationality, whether they were consistent to ground objective moral values and duties, and so on and so forth. And just came to the conviction that they were not, and that the reasons for my atheism and naturalism, for example, just started to become intrinsically less possible than some of the brute facts. Not I shouldn't say brute facts. Some of the the necessary facts of reality, like objective moral values and duties, that were explained by God, right? So that started the process down. And so I started, you know, reading as much as I could in religious philosophy, started reading various religious traditions. I just, for different reasons, find different religious traditions wholly philosophically inadequate. And so I think the Christian, I found that even as a kind of this deconverting naturalist, I found the robust intellectual tradition of Christianity to be far more at the time, I wouldn't say satisfying, far more interesting than a lot of these other traditions. And so I started exploring Christianity and through that process, basically reading through the Bible, coming to know Jesus Christ as my Savior that way. So it's somewhat interesting to me that the way that, at least in my life, and I know this doesn't always or even mostly occur this way, but I think that I was somewhat predestined to become a presuppositionalist because my deconversion story was largely through almost a case study in presuppositionalism of the failure of the internal working of my naturalistic worldview to account for some of these transcendental facts of reality and so on and so forth. I didn't know the language then to say that.
Right.
But now looking back and having the language and the categories, that was largely my experience. So within that, you know, during that time, during the actual kind of conversion moment, that's where I actually had a somewhat, religious experience, although mine was nothing like the religious experience that other people have where they feel euphoria and all that kind of stuff. I actually had almost the exact opposite religious experience where I felt very, very unclean, very undone, very, very, very sickly feeling intellectually and spiritually now looking back on it. It was almost a kind of where people have this kind of overwhelming sense of joy in some religious experiences. I had kind of an all-encompassing kind of oppressive sense of the opposite, which was obviously caught my attention, and I think that was the moment that I felt sinful before God, and where I had the first realization of, oh, I actually am sinful before a creator. I'm not just sinful as in I've done bad things to people. And I'm not like a horrible person. I'm not like a murderer or stealer. I was actually, by all accounts, a rather, quote unquote, moral person. I wasn't, I don't have one of those, like, I was an alcoholic and, sleeping around. And I didn't do any of that. But felt, very, very, just the weight of sin in that moment was my religious experience.
Okay. Yeah. So I think you intrigued me now. And feel free to correct me if I don't want to like put words in your mouth. So I'm going to try to like interpret what you said. So what I got out of that was you basically studied philosophy. You had this like understanding, you had a problem with the naturalist worldview and like one clarifier question. We don't need to get too deep into it. We can always like do this after I like kind of express my thoughts, but when you say like naturalism, are you like saying that like the realist position in philosophy doesn't account for everything? Were you kind of like a more anti-realist approach?
I wouldn't say that it was realist or anti-realist, though even as a naturalist, I was a realist.
Okay.
naturalism, the sense that I'm using it is kind of in the philosophical naturalist sense where I believed that, I agreed with Sagan that the cosmos is all that is, all that was, and all that ever will be, that there was nothing outside of, transcendent to, logically prior to, grounding, anything like that, to the natural order, whether or not that meant just our local universe or, the cosmos is kind of all of whatever the universe or the multiverse or, you know, parallel right. universes, whatever, however extensive the natural goes, that's all that there is. That was my atheistic worldview.
Okay. So I think, this is where you can like, tell me if I mischaracterize you here. So basically you had a problem with kind of this naturalist worldview, almost like a materialist worldview, right? And then you kind of went searching and you went searching for something beyond like more, like, I guess you could say spiritual, supernatural, transcendent, like you kind of said. And that's what brought you through personal experience, brought you to Christianity. And I say personal experience where you more connected with the Bible more, for example, and stuff like that. Is that good characterization?
Well, I can get why you're going that way. The reason why it kind of felt disparate is because all of these things were kind of happening at the same time. While the philosophical was moving in a progression towards the end of it, some of these things were kind of stacked simultaneous with each other. I think you're mostly right. The only thing that I would say is that it wasn't simply that I became kind of dissatisfied and unsure of naturalism. I actually got to a point where, which I still largely hold, that not only did we not know how naturalism, like it wasn't just kind of, I don't know how naturalism would do this. I actually have positive reasons to think that naturalism cannot do it. Mm. And so based on that, you know, based on, okay, well now I think naturalism, it's just not, I'm not just agnostic with regard to naturalism, you know, speaking of myself back then, you know, I became actually convinced that naturalism is false.
Okay.
Somewhat on the order of what you know, Nagel does. But I also found, this was way before Nagel wrote his Mind and Cosmos. You know, he's kind of expressed very similar concerns. But I didn't find any real, atheistic alternative, you know, any other worldviews, that are atheistic in any sense, that fared any better. They seemed to fare, you know, existentialism seemed to fare far worse. Pragmatism far. I don't know how anyone is a pragmatist. There was positive reasons for why I thought it failed.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point, then I said, okay, well, I mean, if naturalism can't account for it, then at that point, my methodological naturalism, because, you know, I was a methodological naturalist, altered, right? I didn't abandon it. I actually still largely hold the methodological naturalism when it comes to science, right? So basically what was, a kind of an epistemological method, just got, you know, I just trimmed the fat and it just trimmed down to, okay, well, that's a good methodology for science, but beyond that, it's largely not helpful. At that point, I started exploring, other options. And I just found Christianity to be much more, have more veracity to it. And so, leaned in my studies in that direction.
Okay. So the reason I like keep kind of asking these, clarifier questions is because from the sounds of it, it's like, and like I said, I'm like not discounting your spiritual experiences at all. I'm definitely not one to do that. My main point is you actually do feel like someone that I want to like bring this topic up. And I'm not saying like you're necessarily doing this. So I guess maybe one more clarifier question before maybe we can get into more juicy stuff is do you you don't discount other people's spiritual experiences then from the sounds of it. So from that, do you think in a sense that people that are of other faiths, it's possible that they're connecting to something that is maybe true about the universe in a sense?
Yeah. So my take on other is other religious experiences and other religions is, you know, I could talk about it a lot, but for, you know, two points that I can bring out here is first is that I think false views, I think people can have warranting reasons to believe false things. Right. I'm not one of those people that thinks because something is false, it can have no evidence and people don't have warrant to believe it. right? So I just don't hold that view of evidence or warrant. I think, you know, I think that I'm warranted and believe a lot of things that I believe that I'm almost, you know, I'm certain that I believe false things, but I hopefully I don't believe them for bad reasons or for, you know, no evidence or anything like that. So I just grant that same charity to everybody.
Right. So I guess my main point is like,
what's happening?
Like you want to still say that like some religions are wrong, but from the sounds of it, it sounds like you base a lot, I'm not saying all, but I'm saying like a large portion of your basis for being a Christian. And like I said, I'm not trying to persuade you necessarily to not be Christian. I'm more trying to persuade people to be willing to kind of explore other areas of spirituality in a sense, or other religions and stuff like that. So I guess my main point is like, it doesn't seem like you have a basis to discount people's personal spiritual experiences. And then maybe they kind of do what you like similarly did, where they like kind of connected with the text and the history of the religion and stuff like that. And they kind of go down that very similar path where the almost like, and I get this because, you know, I've had spiritual experiences as well, where you just feel like you're spiritually dead inside. You feel disconnected from the world. The materialist worldview isn't necessarily doing it for you. And this isn't to say like any spiritual experiences are like real in a sense that you are necessarily getting insight into like what is objective in the universe. And it's not even necessarily discounting a materialist worldview. My main point is like, I just run into Christians that say that their religion is the one true religion. You must follow my one true religion. And I just don't think they have a basis for that. So I guess not to like retread track. We've already tracked. Yeah. I feel like that was a mumble. But
I know where you're going. So let me give one clarification and then I'll address that. So, because I do believe Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, right? You know, no one will come through to the Father but through me, right? I mean, I wholeheartedly believe that actually. The clarification that I would give, when I had my religious experience, it wasn't just kind of a grandiose existential angst. There's kind of a cheesy Christian argument that's like when an atheist feels grateful, who are you grateful to? And I understand that's a cheesy, you know, cheesy kind of cliche, but it's helpful for me to say that when I had my religious experience, it was not kind of this deep general existential angst, disconnectedness to the universe. It was very specifically, I felt guilty and grievous and the need to apologize to a very specific person. it was not a general, you know, I don't hide it. I suffer from clinical depression. I'm very aware of the feeling of just kind of general moroseness. This was not it. This was very clearly, you know, for people who've had a religious experience, you understand the kind of inability to verbalize the specific feeling of this was very, very specifically that I had wronged a very specific person, and that person was God. It's not quite that general, you know, right. Naturalists can feel out of place and angst. As far as your other question for why I can say what I've said that religious observance of other religions, you know, I don't necessarily discount or say they don't have evidence or warrant, but at the same time, I can say I think they're wrong, and I think that my religion is the correct one. Mm-hmm. Is because I mean, there's a couple different reasons, but the main one is partly because I think that I'm warranted to believe that my religion is true, and if that's the case. Then Scripture very clearly tells us that all humanity is created in the image of God, that all humanity is desperately seeking to be a God unto ourselves and to find truth in ourselves and truth and meaning apart from God. So on the one hand, I think these religious experiences are very, very much true in the sense that I think that they are. The image of God is very clearly manifest in these persons. However, I do also agree with the Bible when it says in Romans 1 that the natural man apart from God attempts to suppress the truth in unrighteousness. I think largely these religious experiences, which are attributed to false gods, false experiences, are kind of like when you're attempting to push down a carpet, but the carpet won't play nice and it pops up somewhere else. I think these religious experiences just are that attempt to suppress the truth about the one true God and creator of the cosmos. As we push it down, these religious experiences may pop up in other places as you know, the image of God in us is kind of, not to make it too poetic or mystical, but the image of God is somewhat singing out and ringing out that we ought to be worshiping the creator, the one who has made us and redeemed us in Jesus Christ, rather than largely rather than attempting to justify ourselves by our own means and measures, right? Because that to me is the fundamental difference between Christianity and other religions, is that Christianity is a monergistic religion that God has done all that is necessary and sufficient for salvation. Every other religion is you better get your act together. You need to make yourself right. You need to make yourself savable. And I think that is destructive to the human person.
I mean, I don't know if I necessarily say every religion does that, but I don't want to like go down that point. I'm going to like put forward this idea and you can tell me if this seems like a beneficial idea to do. So
Hey Brendan.
Yeah. What's up?
Yeah, no, continue your thought, but maybe so we can keep the conversation just moving. After you give this thought, I think this would be helpful for Tyler now. Maybe you could kind of spell out why you're not a Christian, right? Like, you have a theological framework, this kind of pantheism, and maybe you kind of be helpful. All right, awesome, great.
So like, my idea was, so I'm going to kind of, and part of this is like my actual personal experience, but I want to like kind of know like how you would come back at it in a sense from like a Christian perspective, because I kind of want to like still understand like where you're coming from, but I also want you to like kind of understand where I'm coming from in a sense. So for example, does that sound like a good idea?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely fine.
Okay, so like I won't necessarily, because like I'm gonna probably post this on my podcast feed, and I don't like being too expressive of how I achieve altered states. But so let's just say I like entered a altered state, right? And let's use the code word meditation. And so through this meditation, we're gonna use and experiences, even with like a group of people, sometimes, right? For example, I saw a like goddess that I've never read about, never heard about, but it was a very real visual experience in my mind. I felt it, felt connected. I felt oneness. I felt, you know, a higher purpose. I felt like I was like given a message of what I should do in this world. All that stuff that's very common in spiritual experiences, right? I had that experience. Like, it was to a T what people talk about. And I've had a few of those, right? Now, from that, I kind of started exploring various spiritual methods, I guess you could say, in various religions, even within Christianity. I don't want to like get too into the nitty gritty of what we mentioned in the chat, because I want to post this, but like I talked about it in the chat with you. I know you chimed in about like what I said about Jesus, and we can get into that later. Possibly we'll see where the conversation goes. But also just like how Buddhism talks about this and stuff like that. So kind of like to generalize there. And then from that, it kind of just like left me open to the possibility of this like kind of higher power. And I had these ideas of like, say, like kind of what I was discussing earlier, where it was like panpsychism, pantheism, and cosmopsychism, stuff like that, where it kind of connected with my experience. So like my point of like saying all of this essentially is I had that kind of profound experience, right? And I had ideas before that fit with that profound experience. And then when my rational brain got back on, because when you're in those profound experiences, you're not really like, you're not really, your rationality is all out of whack. You don't know what's real and what's not in a weird way.
Right.
But also it's, I don't know how to explain this. It's like, you don't know what's real, but you also like feel something that's more real. And that is, I'm not saying that what I experienced is the most real thing in the universe or it's transcendent. I'm not necessarily saying that. Maybe it's possible. I don't fucking know. but my point is like that led me to create these reasons for my beliefs. So from what I'm curious about is when I like say this experience, and I know you're not like someone that would do this, but it's very common, and I want to know from a Christian that, like yourself, that I can tell is, like, very well-read and, like, knows his shit, because I hate it. The one thing I hate is when a Christian, like, I'm trying to have an open dialogue with a Christian, for example, and I spill out my spiritual experience after they spilled out theirs, and then they say to me, like, oh, you were just, that was, like, demonic forces trying to persuade you, and they were trying to trick you and all this stuff. And it's like, I just don't think a Christian has a way to discount what I experience. And then I also have a reason for my beliefs that connect with the worldview, that seem to connect with science roughly. I'm not saying it's necessarily proven or anything like that. I don't really think anything's necessarily proven that much. But do you kind of like see where I'm going there? Like, how would a Christian address that?
Yeah, no, I understand. Let me try to answer this several different ways, right? So I think that it's possible that some religious experiences are demonic. I think that's entirely possible, right? Because I believe in demons, I believe in possession, right? Those types of things. So it's entirely possible, right? I also think that it's entirely possible that someone who is made in the image of God, right, living in God's creation, because I don't hold necessarily that there is this hard dichotomy between the sacred and the secular, right? I don't think that there's God in heaven and then that God has nothing to do. There's no spirituality in nature whatsoever, right? I just don't agree with that. I think a consistent biblical view is that the earth is God's handiwork and the earth is God's throne. And there's a very real unity between heaven and earth, right? That's why when the book of Revelation talks about the kind of the eternal state, it's not a dichotomy between heaven and earth. It's that we will live on the new heavens and the new earth. There's a unity between the two. So I just have no problem with the idea that someone made in the image of God post-fall will have these, you know, kind of mystical experiences that are somehow a touching of the soul of the Imago Dei with the reality of the creation around them. However, with that said, I also believe, I have an episode on this. This was actually the thesis of my senior in theology, is that I also believe that the noetic effects of the fall, right, or the thing that sin actually does to them, is that it breaks down the creator creature distinction, right? So, before the fall, mentally, what I think would have happened, what would have been the case, is that we would do everything in proper relation to the creator. So, we would have understood the first and most important thing about ourselves, and that is that we are created in God's image. Right. So I think that sin breaks down what Martin Buber used to call the I-thou distinction. Right. So, you know, previously we would have understood the first and most important thing about ourselves that grounds all the other knowledge of ourselves, which is just that we are created creatures. That is the fundamental thing, characteristic about ourselves, is that we are creatures in God's creation. So I always find it interesting that, you know, these religious experiences, I don't mean to discount them in that, oh, you're demon possessed or you're delusional, you're an idiot or something like that. But what I think you probably had a very real spiritual experience But when the understanding of that kind of reflectively starts to come back through and we're interpreting what did that mean, mm-hmm. when the unbeliever, when the non-Christian is doing that, it is going back through a grid that has that has fallen from the noetic effects of sin. It is going back through and not adequately recognizing that the very real experience was a touching of the image of God to the Creator, right? And so I actually think what should be, to a Christian, a mystical experience, right? The monastics regularly had these experiences, but for them, it drew their attention to their Creator. What I find interesting in these experiences is that they're very similar to what the monastics had. But rather than drawing their mind to the Creator, it draws the mind to the self or the demolishment of the self, right? Pantheism ultimately ends the demolishment of self. And I would say that in a very real sense, Christianity, you know, God is most glorified. We are glorified in who we are, right? It is when I recognize that I am a Creator, distinct and loved by that God is most glorified. It's not that kind of has a strong motif of dying to. It's not in the sense of destruction to self and denial of self in the kind of existential sense. It's the denial of self in the kind of ministerial sense, where I place other people as more important than me in my service. Right. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. So I think, okay. So like, and let me see how I want to phrase this. So like, I get what you're saying, but it's still from that point of view, it feels as though like you're still saying, because like, it's kind of like you're presupposing and mm-hmm. like, let me kind of finish my thought, presupposing your doctrine to then validate your spiritual experience, right? And like, and also, and the reason I kind of feel safe saying this now, because now they're kind of doing more, luckily there's more research studies being done around these spiritual experiences, which I find interesting. So I feel like more of this stuff will start coming to light from years, at least I hope. That's my optimistic worldview, at least.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of like uniting spiritual experiences people have. And I feel like you kind of took your own interpretation, and maybe I'm doing the same thing here, but my understanding is, as although some spiritual experiences are very inward and destructive of the self, for example, right? And I agree with that. You're on the nose with that point. However, when that destructive of the self and that connectedness is starting to be talked about, it's usually in reference to this connection to some higher divine. And a lot of times they describe that divine as a God figure, a God energy, a divine energy. And they also describe it in a, how do I like word this without trying to not get woo-woo, because I'm not really a woo-woo person. They describe it in the sense that they become connected to that in the, like the higher purpose idea. And that's like a very, I think that's like a, what Christianity desires for people in a sense, is they desire for people to seek the path of Christianity, to speak the way of Jesus, right? And to seek that so that they get the connection to the divine. And also the other way to say it, and this is something like Jesus talked about, is the idea of unconditional love. That's a very another common theme in these kind of spiritual experiences people have, even when they don't connect it to Christianity. These spiritual experiences of feeling of the divine and unconditional love. So it is that destruction of the self so that you can connect with that divine. So the reason I like find that important is I don't want to say you're like affirming my beliefs, but it's like, how do I say this? It still feels like, and maybe someone can like jump in to like have us have better clarifier questions, because maybe I'm just like misunderstanding you. It feels like you're trying to say like your personal experience almost has more validity. And I'm not saying you're saying that, because you're also like bringing in the doctrine. However, you're kind of like assuming the doctrine by doing that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying there?
No, I absolutely
just jump
do.
In real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, if I just by way of clarification,
yeah.
So, and Tyler, same thing, just like as Brendan was saying, correct me if I'm wrong. So what I understand you to be saying, I don't understand Tyler to be assuming his position. I think he's just, he's basically trying to give an account for non-Christian religious experience through the paradigm of his Christian worldview, right? He has a worldview and he's trying to account for it. So it's, you can almost see it as a conditional, right? Given Christian theism, this is how Tyler accounts for a wide spectrum of religious belief. And then he's going to appeal to things like the noetic effects of sin, which is kind of like a fancy, maybe Tyler can dive into that. But the way I understand that is it's just kind of like a fancy theological way to describe the effects that sin has on our cognitive faculties, you know, or spiritual characteristics. And so we have a distinction between experience, right? So religious experience, and then the interpretation of that experience. And I think from a Christian perspective, non-Christians can have experiences that put them in touch with something objective, but because their spirit hasn't been rejuvenated by God, they're not going to have a proper interpretation of that experience. Is that somewhat correct, close to what you're saying, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, thank you for that. I would actually, the only caveat is that I would actually think that my claim is somewhat stronger than that, actually. So I understand that this might make it more challenging to accept my view, but, you know, in the name of intellectual honesty, I have to say that I think that I'm even claiming more than that. I absolutely agree that what I'm doing is trying to give an account for these religious experiences given Christianity. What I would say, though, now, again, remember, I gave the difference between kind of what in kind of by providence, how I came to believe and what I think ought to make people believe. I would actually argue that I think the truth of Christianity that you know, the triune God revealed in the Bible is true, is a necessary precondition to rationality. So I would say not only is it the case that this would be a kind of how I would understand it given Christianity, I would actually go so far as to say even if how I'm reconciling it with Christianity is not the case. So maybe I'm wrong that given Christianity, this is how we ought to understand the noetic effects, or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it all is demon possession, but I'm with you that not only feels crass and incomplete, but it also feels kind of reflexively self-destructive in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I think that what I would actually, you know, what I would go further is to say that if Christianity were not the case, then I don't think there's any intelligible way to understand not only religious experience, but any experience, because I think the truth of Christianity just is a necessary precondition to rationally understand any experience. Okay. Right. So I'm whether or not you agree with that or not, I just wanted to, you know, lay all my cards on the table. And I think it's somewhat a stronger claim, though I think Urias was giving a very charitable summary of what I did say.
Can you unpack that like a little bit? Like, why is rationality not the case, or like doesn't really, we can't make a rational, coherent worldview without Christianity?
Yeah. So there's a couple of things. One of them, and I think this came up, I don't know if it was you or Urias that this came up with. I know it's come up with others that are here listening. And that is that, I don't think that we come to these questions neutral. So when we say, okay, well, give me evidence for this, give me evidence for that, I don't think anyone is coming to the table neutral. I think what we are just inevitably in is a battle of worldviews, and our worldviews bring certain presuppositions and evidentiary standards and plausibility structures and cognitive frameworks and so on and so forth. And so when we're trying to understand these things, I just don't think that we're neutral. So when I come to these questions, you know, I believe that Christianity is true. I think Christ is is the Lord and creator of all. And so therefore I'm not committed to say that for the sake of argument, I need to grant that logic is possible, possible apart from God, because given my worldview, nothing is possible apart from God. Right. So there's that kind of, I agree with you that I'm presupposing that. I just don't think that's a problem, because I think we all come with presuppositions. I'm just trying to be as epistemologically self-aware and state my presuppositions for everyone to see. I'm very comfortable with them. So I would actually argue that I've given this argument in, if you go and read in the Discord that we all share, because I know this is being recorded for elsewhere. Not everyone's in the Discord, but if you go to Arguments for God 1 at the very beginning, I give this argument. The deductive version would be something like, if God did not exist, then we could not coherently affirm transcendental facts of reality. Transcendental facts of reality are just, they're not, these are not, it doesn't mean transcendence as an outside, it's just a transcendental fact, as I'm sure you know, but just for those listening, is a necessary condition for rationality to be possible, right? So the laws of logic, the uniformity of nature, the existence of intentional minds, the intelligible mapping of those minds onto reality, the realness of the past, the ability for induction, right? You have all of these transcendental facts that are required before we can even be rational.
Right.
Right. I think that we obviously can be rational. I think we are attempting to be rational now. I think that's a trivial premise. But by modus tollens, that gets us that God must exist, right? So I understand that's the controversial premise, right? So I'm going to say, well, not only based on my Christian conviction that God is the creator of all things and thus has imbued us as image bearers with the ability to reason within a rationally ordered cosmos, I'm going to say that I find the impossibility of the contrary, right? I find no other worldview with the kind of ontic ability to ground and explain these things, right? So I don't think simply saying that they are brute facts will do it. I don't think saying that they're simply axioms that we have to assume to be rational, because that just clearly begs the question. I don't think Platonism works, because largely I just don't think it's coherent. I don't think alternative religious systems work, because I think one of those transcendental facts is the unity and diversity equally of the one and the many, right? That old philosophical problem, which I think a tritheistic God of Christianity does explain and ground. So I think it is the necessary precondition for that. So again, you don't have to agree with that, but these are the reasons why I would make the stronger claim that I'm not merely trying to do a hypothetical. If Christianity is true, then this is how I would explain it. I would actually make the bolder claim that because Christianity is true, there's no intelligible way to understand these religious experiences apart from the God of Christian theism.
If I can just jump in real quick.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think Tyler's claim is even stronger than what I'm about to say right now. Tyler isn't even saying that Christianity best explains a priori, mathematical, moral, all these sets of truths. I think right. Tyler's claim is it's not even an inference to the best explanation. It's a necessary condition. Christianity has to be true in order for us to make sense of the rest of this wider. Is that what you're saying?
So I think that I can say that. Although, again, for simple kind of discussion, this isn't really a formal debate, but for debate decorum, for debate tactics, you could say, I actually think that I could make the abductive statement also, right? So that's the deductive version. I also think that I can say, given the fact that we can coherently affirm transcendental facts of reality, it is more plausible that Christian theism is true, given the features of Christian theism and given the apparent inability of other worldview systems to do the same, right? So I think that I can run an abductive version of the same argument and have high levels of warrant
and justification, whereby if someone cannot provide a more plausible alternative, that actually adds to the warrant. Not in the sense of the Christian saying, well, can you disprove God? Therefore, I can prove God. I'm saying this argument gives a very good warrant for something. And if there is no defeater for it, that itself is an additional warrant for why we ought to believe it the case in this abductive sense.
So, okay, that's kind of like this. Okay, let's see where we can take this.
I really like this, by the way. So,
okay, good.
You kind of like it. I really like it. So I'm enjoying this immensely.
Yeah, no, I like where you steered it because, okay, so like this is where you're going to, let me see if I want to like throw this out there, but it's like an idea that I'm still trying to understand myself. Okay, so from the sounds of it, it sounds like you are basically understanding, and I think I kind of got this in the chat. So like I said, I'm willing to say, I don't know if you ask me a question that I honestly don't know because I'm one that is not afraid to say that. Okay, so from what you said, my interpretation of that and understanding of that is that you're basically making this presupposition and you're putting faith in that. Now, but like before, so a lot of people get like defensive of this idea. I think we put faith, everyone has to put faith in something. And that is the reason behind that is because I think humans also have this misunderstanding of our ability to like clearly reason to our beliefs and like hold this completely coherent and understandable worldview. I just think it's not within human possibility to do that. Like we're never going to understand everything. That is like kind of my understanding. Yeah. We're never going to do that. So like when you pull that back is you start realizing, oh, like my reason isn't perfect. So I'm not going to fully understand stuff and I'm going to have to put faith in stuff essentially. So my understanding is you kind of put faith in that, like, because that's what makes sense for you to create your worldview. Is that a fair assessment? And then I'll kind of dive in.
I think it may be a fair assessment if I understand what you mean by faith. Mm-hmm. That's not typically how I would use faith, but I think I know what you mean.
Okay.
Right, because typically in the Christian tradition, not kind of the new atheist. Critiques of religion, right? In the Christian tradition, faith isn't an act of the intellect. It's an act of the will, right?
Right.
Faith is a volitional thing, mm-hmm. right? So I'm not sure that I would use faith in kind of Christianese sense for that. But if I understand what you mean by faith, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe by faith, I don't think you mean something as crass as the new atheists do by, just complete blind something without any evidence whatsoever.
Like calculated faith.
Yeah. Just kind of, at that point I would just say, well, do you mean just something by it's a reasonable inference that we feel that we just have to go on to make progress?
Yeah, honestly, kind of. It's like something that if we're going to try to understand this wondrous cosmos, in a sense, we kind of have to start putting faith in certain things to try to best understand what we possibly can. So now some people will interpret that as I'm saying everything's subjective. That's not necessarily true because there could be objective truth out there. But I am kind of willing to say that as humans, I don't know if I want to assert this. I'm willing to possibly ascribe myself to the idea that although objective truth can be out there, we don't know it once we hit it. For sure. With certainty where you're like saying this is absolutely true. So like the reason I kind of brought this, like I feel like we're on the same page of the faith thing. And the reason I brought this up is there's like, so I know I brought it up in the chat, but I like had to describe it. And I know you might disagree with this, but I think it's often because it's mischaracterized and also because maybe I'm just like not fully understanding it yet. But Nolan Gertz put forward this idea around nihilism where he almost like puts this like psychological spin on nihilism, where it's not necessarily like saying that, like trying to argue for like this philosophical worldview of nihilism. It's more like observing something about the human condition of understanding that As humans, we have to put faith in things. And as humans, we're creators of ideas. And basically, we're creators. We're creators of ideas that turn into things. Like, I mean, for example, like the buildings and skyscrapers we see in a big city that started as an idea that manifested from some idea and then became a creation. That's what we do as humans. And we put faith in things in that other sense that we talked about earlier. So my point with nihilism is it's like almost this understanding that we have to do this creation of, say, values, purpose, meaning, and all this stuff. And like at first that sounds like it's some sort of absurdism or existentialism. But the reason is what I like find interesting about your worldview is that it's almost like you know that you're doing this kind of faith assessment. And like you can still like, and I'm not like I'm saying what I'm trying to say to you is like you can still try to convince people of Christianity, but I still feel like you should be open to people pursuing spirituality and not actually feel like guilty for not trying to persuade them otherwise. Because like what from my interpretation of kind of your worldview, and I could be wrong in this assessment because it's, you know, this is like an hour long conversation. I'm trying to understand you, but it's almost like a passive nihilism. And what that means is like you understand this reality of the human condition, but you've decided that, okay, I'm going to find within the traditions that we have within all this like kind of human creation, I'm going to pick the worldview that I feel comfortable with. And that's where you found Christianity. And then on the flip side, and I'm not putting like a value judgment on which one's better and which one's worse. It's not that. It's I know you said there's like nothing neutral, but I'm trying to remain neutral about what both of these mean. And then there's the other side where it's more of like this active nihilism, where it's basically saying that, okay, we both understand this human condition, right? You have the past nihilist and the active nihilist. But the active nihilist is saying, okay, I get that we're not going to know and we have to create stuff. Now, maybe I can like borrow from those other ideas, but like let's try to create stuff and like discuss what outcomes we want. And that's kind of what I like. And you can push back because I'm trying to make this idea more persuasive to people. But that's the feeling I get from you at least. And like I said, it's not a bad thing to be a passive nihilist. It's not bad.
I don't think you're making it as like a you're terrible.
No, I'm definitely not doing that.
I have a lot of thoughts about that, so let me see if I can organize some of them. I said this in the chat between us that at that point I'm not sure that nihilism is a helpful kind of heuristic to understand these things because the term just becomes so broad then. That it covers a whole host of views, many of which are contradictory. Mm-hmm. That it just kind of becomes a term with no teeth. I also recognize that I have a personality. Let's call it a personality defect, where I don't like new uses of words that will make you misunderstand if you read that word from prior generations.
Right. So let me add a quick clarifier to that. So it's actually, maybe you might be correct in that sense, but it's more of like, how do I say this? Noam Gertz is basically trying to pull in historical like nihilists such as like, and Nietzsche was technically not a nihilist, but he kind of was in a way. That's a whole, we could do a whole discussion on that. So like, let's not get into that too much, but, it's more of like basically saying that the interpretation of what that word means has been kind of warped because there is still nihilists, people that practice nihilism or they think they are. But that's not what I'm attributing it to.
They're all over Big Lebowski.
Yeah. Kind of.
But I mean, we could put a pin, you know, that's just my own personality defect where I kind of sniff out, well, at least to me, it kind of has the smell of we're going to make this meaning. And it's not really kind of the way that we've historically understood that term in the literature. And so I recognize that I have that personality defect that makes me really hesitant to say that that's a reasonable use of the term, because I just foresee that it's going to cause way more confusion reading the literature down the road. beyond that, though, I would want to push back in two ways. One of them is that, you know, I mean, for anyone who's familiar with presuppositionalism, they're usually familiar with kind of a kind of presuppositionalist that most academic presuppositionalists really don't like. And it's hard to say why we don't like it, because philosophically we agree with kind of the popularizers of it, but methodologically and tactically we really don't. So, and you know, for those of you who have a bad taste when you hear the term presuppositionalist, you just intrinsically know why and who I'm talking about. I don't want to necessarily like throw people under the bus. So I would say that I am being consistent in my presuppositionalism and my Christianity by saying I'm not pushing for a kind of Cartesian certainty. So I'm with you. I don't actually think that outside of either deductive or mathematical or kind of tautological truths that we can have any type of certainty whatsoever. Right? I'm not pushing for kind of that psychological state of having certainty, right? Because I don't mm-hmm. I don't think certainty really is an epistemic condition. I think it's a psychological condition, right? It is you know, certainty is having a certain level of conviction about something, right?
Right.
Philosophically, I know something simply if I have, you know, warranted true belief or justified true belief, I should say, right? So
right.
Right. So I just don't think that we have to have kind of a Cartesian state of psychological certainty to say that we know things or that we know objectively true things. So I also have no problem saying that I can bump up against and I can know objectively true things, even in the condition where I'm lacking, you know, the psychological state of certainty. I just don't have a problem with that. So I think that's probably why I'm not going to be really convinced by Gertz or those types of views, just because I don't see that. I just don't see the problem that they're trying to address.
So, okay. So maybe I need to like clarify more and maybe use an example here to help. So like from my understanding, what you're putting forward is like you basically understand that. And like the reason you don't find really value in it is almost like you already just know that. But the thing is, a lot of people don't know that. There's a lot of people that believe that they can be absolutely certain about something. And that's why I find value in it, is because it kind of, it's like this way of like zapping you out of this like idea that humans have that we can be absolutely certain of something and have that certainty that you were talking about, right? So that's kind of where I find value in it. But like to kind of bring up an example, I'm not saying all atheists do this. Some atheists will say like, I am absolutely certain there is no God. But then there's a lot of atheists that will say, they maybe not consciously, maybe it's subconsciously, they kind of like accept this nihilist idea. But we don't even have to use that idea because I know that term freaks people out sometimes. But we'll say like they understand that they're putting faith in something, right? What they're doing is like, they're still kind of, they're saying they're calculating like you are, like they're saying, okay, they lack the belief in God, for example. I know you get that example all the time. So they're saying like, sure, we don't know everything that's going on, but we don't have the evidence to believe in, say, like the Christian God, for example. Do you hear where I'm going with that? It's where it's like, it almost like the reason I like find all this stuff important and this discussion important in the discussion I brought up about spirituality is because it's almost like a way to zap people out of this idea of this, like they can be absolutely certain about stuff and create like this level playing field to create more peaceful discussions. Because once you realize that the human condition is not being able to grasp onto that absolute truth, all of a sudden the doors of what is possible, what you can be curious about, what you can explore, what you can understand about ethics and all this stuff, even in science, everything, the doors just open and it creates this level playing field where we can actually have a discussion where it's not like this us versus them mentality that, oh, they think they have the truth. No, I think I have the truth. And it just creates this like butting heads effect. So I kind of like, I just kind of spilled the purpose of everything I'm trying to do here.
No, I get the sentiment. I mean, in Christianity, right? So, there's passages where, you know, the children of Israel were in exile in Babylon, and Jeremiah is writing, look, while you're in Babylon, seek the peace of the city that you're in, right? While you're in exile among others, mm-hmm. you know, you're not to be pugnacious and rambunctious. You're work hard to make the city that you live in, you know, this pagan city, seek right. the peace of the city. I understand the impulse. I would still push back and say, well, again, I'm not a nihilist in the sense that I deny the fact that we can't rub up against objective truth. I don't think we are being creative in our moral epistemology. I don't think we're being creative in our medicine. I don't think we're being creative in our epistemology. And I would go back to say, you know, given Christian theism, these experiences are intelligible because Christianity can ground these transcendental facts of reality. I would simply push back that I think what is sacrificed in trying to kind of go it alone without God, so to speak, in these other ways, is that you are sacrificing, epistemic consistency in that regard. That I just think that these in these other attempts of worldviews to understand these experiences, mm-hmm. it necessarily now happens in kind of a baseless way. Like Van Til had this fun little cliche of saying you're sitting on God's lap to slap God in the face. Right here he's speaking of, you know, people who are trying to use reason to deny God, you know, but we could equally say, well, people are sitting on God's lap to say that you don't need to sit on God's lap. I would push in that direction. I mean, at this point we've been going for a long time, and you and I have been talking for a long time. I think we had wanted to get, you know, if people are enjoying this conversation, I think I'm happy to continue. But I also want to be sensitive that we're in a huge room full of lots of people. And we had a couple other people who we had agreed were going to be part of this conversation. So,
let me just do like one closing thought to like kind of wrap up. I feel like I'm trying to create like a full circle connection of what I was trying to say the whole time. So like my point of like my worldview, it connecting with this is like, so basically what I'm trying to say is I agree with you that we have to presuppose things, and we have to like kind of make that, going back to kind of what we somewhat agreed upon around faith, we have to make this faith assessment in something, and we have to decide where we're going to put our, you know, beliefs towards and what we're going to create with that. And I know you don't like the term creation, but kind of basically maybe not creation, or let's say learn, right? So from that position, right, what can we ground things to? And that's where I kind of before brought up that kind of broad idea around God, where I have these personal, transcendent, divine feeling of connectedness experiences. I connect them to a worldview that kind of connects with, I try to connect it with science. I try to connect it with various perspectives in spirituality. I'm also a big fan of perennial philosophy, which is kind of this idea that, along with pantheism, not necessarily pantheism, so I don't want to put that in this category, but perennial philosophy, where it's this idea that all religions are kind of, at one point, we're pulling from this one feeling and understanding of truth and all this stuff. But my main point is like, it's still, I get what you're doing is you're trying to ground something in God so that we have something like a foundation to build upon. And I'm trying to do the same thing. So like, all I'm trying to say is, and I know you disagree with this, we're probably just have to end up agreeing to disagree so we can open it to others. But in the sense that I'm trying to ground it on something that we can build upon, but also that is more accepting of the human condition and human reality, that we have this limited capacity of what we can possibly know. So we need to remain open to those possibilities. So basically my big assertion about life and like why I form the beliefs I do is that I understand, I don't know. B, I have limitations of what I can know, so I need to find a worldview that leaves me open while also helping me move along and make sense of it and make sense of the experience I'm having. That's all.
Right, and to that degree, I would say that Christianity is, in my estimation, the one that does that, right? Because you know, built in as the creator creature distinction. Right. I brought up earlier, I have every reason on Christianity to believe, I am finite and limited, and there's no sense I am going to understand and unfurl and grasp all of the beauty and the majesty and the complexity and the truth and the, you know, everything that is in, you know, in not only God's good creation, but in the really real, in kind of the philosophical sense, of God himself. Right. So I think all of that gets there. And I would say that, again, I think there's good reason to believe that God is a necessary precondition for that. But I would also, you know, in a kind of quasi, and this is, you know, a topic for a totally different conversation, because I'm now opening the door to a huge other topic, almost in a Pascalian sense. I would say that Christianity is the only worldview that even gives a potential for any meaningful sense of hope, truth, beauty, and justice. And I think that those are significant values that we ought to seek in reality. Right. And if Christianity not only is the only one that can ground and explain the rationality and the coherence of reality, I think Christianity is also the only one that can ground any type of meaningful sense of hope, beauty, and justice as well. So I think Christianity not only is the necessary precondition for kind of the rational life of the human, but also the existential and kind of, you know, spiritual, again, not in the woo sense, but spiritual aspect of humanity as well.